You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Over the middle, caught Saunders, Jalen Saunders, touchdown.
Harris to the end zone.
Mazzoli chased down, end zone, touchdown, Luke Tasker. Into tight traffic, this looks like it's picked, it is picked by Richard Leonard. On second down, Mazzoli looks for Banks in deep, and Banks makes the catch, touchdown. Beats two Ottawa defenders of the football, Pruno and Rowe. And Banks has his second touchdown catch of the game.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, you know that we have so much to talk about. But before we get into everything, I do, at the top of the show, I have to give a correction from the last episode we did. I incorrectly said that Doug Flutie was the quarterback of the 1991 Calgary Stampeders when they played the Argos in the Grey Cup. He wasn't. He didn't get there until 1992, and I would like to thank one of our listeners, Mark, who wrote that in the Three Down Nation comment section pointing out the error. I don't know why, but I just always feel like Flutie is a Stampeder. I know he played with the Argos. I know he played with the Lions, but I just – maybe because my formative years watching the league, he was a Stampeder. I just always associate him with the Calgary Stampeders. And then when the comment that Mark made, I saw it, I was like, oh, my God, you're right. He was still in BC at the time. It completely slipped my mind.
Well, you know, I didn't catch it either when you said it, so it's all good. I believe Danny Barrett was the quarterback that year.
He was. Yes,
so maybe if Doug Flutie was playing, they would have won that game, though. You never know.
You never know. Anyway, thank you, Mark, for pointing out the error. We try to be as perfect as possible on here. We make mistakes. Everyone's human. But this wasn't a big one. It's just one of those, just a weird one that just, you know, one of those things. It happens. Anyway, before we get into the actual talking of actual CFL things, Mike, you were at Grey Cup this past week. You were there, I believe you got in Friday afternoon, if I'm not mistaken, and you were there all the way until Monday. How was your Grey Cup, man? Did you hit the parties? Did you meet some people? You got to have some fun stories to tell us, don't you?
My Grey Cup was so much fun. I just love Grey Cup. It's, you know, I hadn't been there since 2007. And just the atmosphere around, I mean, Ottawa threw a great party, as everyone knows, and I mean, everyone's been raving about it. And yeah, I got in Friday night at about 6 o'clock. I went straight to the Schooners party, met my father there, and it was a great time. You know, they had a really good band going, spectacular. It was a really big venue for the Schooners party. I've only been there once or twice, but in the past it was more of a smaller, maybe a bar type situation. But they had it in the Delta Hotel, I believe, in the big ballroom. So everyone was just, the hype around the possibility of a team in Halifax was just palpable all weekend long, especially at that party. So had a great time on Friday night. Saturday in the afternoon, went to the Three Down Get Down, watched the Vanier Cup. Drew Edwards was there, Milton was there, Dunker was there, all really nice dudes. You know, I met Drew before, as we've talked about in the past. No incidences this time. It was in the afternoon, so
he was able to keep his regular shoes on.
Yes. So no incidences there, but I got a picture with Drew and Milty, and a picture with Dunk. And I haven't met Dunk before, but he was a really nice guy too. So that went really well. Enjoyed watching the Vanier Cup. Went to a couple parties that night, Ryderville, the BC Lions party. It's just a spectacular time. Met some people, you know, that listen to the podcast. Not a ton, but I was in line for the Tiger Cats party on Saturday night, and guy turns around and he says, "Mike," and I was like, "Oh, hi, who are you?" And I guess he met you as well, maybe a couple of years ago. It was kind of a similar situation. He just heard your voice in the crowd and was like, "Hey, I know you." It was Jason, a very loyal listener to the Podski Wee Wee podcast. I guess he lives in the Netherlands too, so that's pretty cool that we have a listener overseas.
We're international, but, Mike.
Yes, we are international. He was a great dude. I hung out with him, met his friend, and they were just all really good Ticats guys. So overall, the game was great. We'll talk about it, but overall, it was just a great time. But I did do some Bozo-ish activities, Josh.
Oh,
I
so.
did do some Bozo activities. So this week, I get the Bozo, and is well deserving because as soon as I landed in Ottawa, I came from the airport in a cab to my hotel. I paid for the cab with my debit card. Must have left my wallet in my lap. Fell out in the cab. I realized it as soon as I got out of the cab. Tried to chase the son of a gun down. He did not notice me, so I was without any ID or luckily I had my debit card, but that was it. No credit card or anything like that. Lost my wallet and couldn't get back on the plane. Couldn't get back on the plane to get back to Edmonton. I had to take a bus, 2.5 days on a bus. So this guy, Bozo of the Week, possibly Bozo of the Year for that. Just terrible, terrible luck. Not luck, stupidity, really.
You know what, though? For you to say you had such a great time, even with that happening, tells me how much fun you really must have had. Because I once lost my wallet and I was apoplectic for like a week on, oh my God, I gotta get all my ID back. I had cash in there. Ugh. But you're
Yeah.
like, yeah, it sucked, but you were still able to have a good time. That would have eaten me up all weekend, I gotta be honest with you.
It was tough. It was really tough, especially when it first happened. I went to the Schooners party and I was like, oh God, why am I like this? Like, I just got here. I haven't even had a drink and I'm losing my wallet. So, it was upsetting, but I just said to myself, you saved up all year for this trip. You can't let this get you down. You can replace all that stuff. You just have to do what you have to do, and that's what I did. So, and I got a phone call the day after I actually got back to Edmonton and said, "Oh, we found your wallet." So,
Oh, are you
a little
serious?
late. Yeah, I'm dead serious. So they're gonna send it out to me. So that's a good thing, but it would have been nice to get it, before I got on the damn bus. But at least I can get it back, right?
You know what? All's well that ends well. At least it's coming back to you. That's a good thing. I do have a couple questions for you, though.
All
I
righty.
kept seeing tweets from you. Hashtag Super Cup.
Super Cup.
You got to explain it, buddy.
Well, my buddy Jason that I met that I was just talking about, and his buddy Eric, we were hanging out like all Saturday night, and it was the end of the night, and I don't know how, like it's very foggy, but we started talking about the Super Bowl and the Grey Cup, and I was like, I just started saying Super Cup, Super Cup, and then we decided on some rule. The Super Cup's played in space on Jupiter's moon. Or just this craziness, and the Ticats always win. It's a very private party. It's a very private game, but it is the most sought-after trophy in football. It is the Super Cup.
Oh, it's intergalactic. Yeah, hashtag
It
Super
is.
Cup. That sounds like a
Yes.
t-shirt idea, my friend.
That's what I was thinking that. I was thinking that.
Maybe you'll see
So
it.
shout out to the Super Cup crew.
That is awesome. Second thing, you were taking some promotional material for the podcast out with you in the form of some pins. How'd the pin handouts go, pal?
Pin handouts went great.
Great.
I got them to a lot of Ticat fans. Handed some random ones to random people that I would talk to, and got one to Pigskin Pete, which I thought was pretty damn cool to have Pigskin Pete wearing our podcast on his shirt. I thought that was really, really cool. Almost got rid of all of them. I think I have about five or six left. So if you want one, if you're listening to this and you want one, hit me up on Twitter. I'll be glad to send it to you wherever you live.
Great, great stuff. Now, believe it or not, despite the fact that Mike had a great time, there was an actual football game that was played last week in the Canadian Football League, and what a hell of a football game it was, eh, Mike? The second I heard that snow was falling in Ottawa, my excitement for the game went from about a 75 to about a 75 million, because there's nothing better than the craziness that can ensue in a snow game. And I'm just wondering, when you saw that white stuff falling, did you get that same sort of feeling that we could be in for something special?
I was so excited when the snow started coming down like that. I went down to have some beers before the game. I couldn't get into anything really. It was the story of the whole weekend. Everything was packed. You had to wait in line. But there was a Jack Astor's right by the stadium. They were serving beers on the patio. and chilly. So that was, you know, I couldn't get in, but had some beers outside. And I met some really cool Thai Cat fans there. So it was three brothers that, you know, I was standing there by myself like a bozo, because I wasn't going with anyone to the game. I was meeting someone there to sit with. But before the game, I didn't have anyone to hang out with. So I just went up to them and said, "Hey, Thai Cat fans." And we just started talking, and they took me in you know, accepted me into their group. So I want to give a shout out to those guys. But yeah, it started snowing a bit when we were walking to the game. We're like, it's snowing a bit. And then it started coming down like crazy. And I was just so happy about it. I was overthrilled about it. I know it's been talked about a lot, but it just reminded me so much of the 96 Grey Cup. And both games were just tremendous. This one really lived up to the hype. It was so awesome being in that atmosphere. My feet got a little bit cold, but that was about it. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's weird. Of all the games, I've been to hundreds of CFL games, mostly Ticats games, but hundreds of CFL games, and I'm not sure that I've ever sat through a snow game. Rain, for sure. Super cold, absolutely. But I can't recall ever sitting through a snow game. So, Rich, I know you're listening. This is my buddy who listens to the show. Let me know if we ever went to a snow game. He's like, I go to all the games with him anyway. The games in Toronto obviously wouldn't have snow, but Rich, if you know that we sat through a snow game, let me know, because I cannot recall us ever sitting through one. But what was it like to kind of sit in the crowd for that? You mentioned 96, so you obviously were there for that one, but you were a kid. Mm-hmm. This is a little bit different. Yeah. Was it colder this time? Were you just so caught up in, I'm watching a Grey Cup in the snow again. This is just awesome. How did it feel to be in the crowd for it?
It felt amazing. Everyone was, you know, pretty excited about the game, and it was just really special to me to be in the snow watching the Grey Cup game. It couldn't have turned out any more better than it did. The snow was coming down, but it didn't bother me one bit. I just can't say enough about how awesome it was to be at that game.
So I'm not even sure where we should start here. I just know when I saw the snow falling, I was like, we're going to be in for some craziness. There's going to be a wicked big play that's going to have something to do with the snow. And we kind of saw that. Maybe the opening, not the opening play of the game, but maybe the first real big play of the game was the 100-yard catch from Ray to Posey. I kind of think, because like Posey stumbles on the, I don't know if they showed it on the replay there, but they showed it at home. Posey kind of stumbles coming out of his break. And then you kind of see, I think it was Tommy Campbell was covering him. Couldn't really catch up to him because of the snow. So like the snow kind of added to that, but like, I think I found the game itself, and you and I talked about this a bit before we started recording. Like the first half and a bit kind of really wasn't all that. Like it was good, but it wasn't. You could kind of sense they were still kind of feeling each other out. And then the second half came, and especially the ending. And I've long held the belief that if a football game ends great, you kind of ignore maybe the boring stuff from the beginning. And this game had one of the all-time great endings. The fumble return, the Argos driving to kick the field goal, the interception. Like, there was just so much that happened in that last 5 minutes that made this maybe not the greatest Grey Cup game of all time, but definitely one that you're going to look back on and go, oh, the snow and the ending. Like, it just made for a great Grey Cup. And it was weird when it all ended. The Argos won, and I was kind of not unhappy about it. And I don't know if this is me maturing. And if it is, I don't like this. I don't like this side of me. I want to be petty and I want to be angry when my team doesn't win, especially when their arch rival does win. But they won. And I was kind of just like, you know what? Good for them. Like Ricky Ray. How do you hate Ricky Ray? Honestly, like, yeah. How do you look at that guy and be like, I want to cheer against him? You can't. He's a great player, but this game just kind of had it all. Don't you think?
It did. It really did. You know, I think it was the longest fumble return in Grey Cup history.
It was
109 yards, and the longest pass play.
Yep.
In Grey Cup history, 100 yards. So, you know, to be there and witness history was pretty damn cool. Like you said, I don't think it was the greatest Grey Cup game ever played, but just everything, you know, the big plays and the elements, the last 5 to 10 minutes of the game, the drama at the end, the interception by Matt Black, a guy who was cut early on in the season, a good Canadian boy coming back and making that play for the Argos. Listen, I was cheering for the Argos the whole game. I do not like Bull Levi Mitchell, even though I gained some respect for him after the game when he made those comments about Kamar Jordan's fumble. I gained a little respect for Bo. So, but during the game, I'm just having a minute. I was cheering for the Argos, and man, what a game it was.
Yeah, I won't say I was cheering for the Argos, but the moment in me that made me realize that I was just kind of rooting for, like, it didn't matter to me which team won, which is weird, because the CFL is such a small league, and you have your favorite team, and I kind of look at the other eight teams, it's like, I don't ever want anyone else to win. But, you know, for the last 17 years, we've been dealing with someone else winning. But that's beside the point. But it was the fumble return. Cassius Vaughn, who was once in Hamilton, kind of a pariah here because he didn't play well while he was here, goes to Toronto, played very well for the Argos this season. And props to him for being that player that I think even the Ticats saw. So Cunningham, now when you look back on it, it's like, oh, what were they doing? But you look at the secondary the Ticats have now. And anyway, this isn't about the Ticats. He has a fumble return, and I was just so – oh my God, what a big play. I was like out of my seat, like not cheering, but I got like excited for it. And it was in that moment, where I was like, maybe I have matured as a fan. Maybe it's not just about rivalries and stuff. And it's like, man, just a great football play. Just like one of the, like you said, it was the longest fumble return touchdown in the history of the Grey Cup. It's just a great play. The hustle by Cleon Lang to punch the ball out, Vaughn scooping it up on the 1 yard line and taking it to the house. Just like, it's one of those once in a lifetime. You don't see a 109-yard fumble return all the time, and it in that moment was kind of when I realized, yeah, it doesn't matter who wins. I'm just here for a good football game, and we got a good football game.
Absolutely, we got a great football game, and you know, I think it might have been Calgary was marching. If they get a field goal, you know, you're thinking, you know, this game's pretty much in the bag. I mean, they're in field goal range. It's pretty much over, right? And then that play happens, and we have a whole different ball game. So it was just so exciting, that play in itself. I thought he might have been down by contact, but the ball came out just before his knee came down. And unfortunate for him, Kamar Jordan, that, you know, he was just trying to make extra yardage. And unfortunately for him, the ball got punched out. But what a play by the Argos. And Cassius Vaughn, I mean, the luck for the Argos for that ball to bounce to him, probably the fastest guy on their defense, right?
Argo so, bounce, man. Argo bounce.
It was the Argo, yeah, for sure. So that was one of many big plays in this Grey Cup game.
What did you think about, speaking of the fumble, Marque McDaniel's post-game comments where he seemed to throw Kamar Jordan under the bus and basically say that fumble cost them the game? I did not like those comments. I was surprised a guy like McDaniel would make them, who tends to be fairly quiet. What did you make of those comments?
I didn't like them either. And I was shocked that McDaniel would say those things, being a veteran, you know. It's just, yeah, it's really rough for him to throw his teammate under the bus like that. They had a chance to tie the game up. One play doesn't decide it. Yes, it was a big swing, but the Stamps still had a chance to tie the game at the end of the game, and Bo made a mistake throwing that ball. So for him to call out one of his fellow receivers was really rough. I felt bad for Kamara. I really did.
Yeah, and especially considering later in that game he makes that big catch with, what, like 45 seconds left in the game to kind of set the Stamps up in a position to tie or take the lead, and then Bo throws an interception. Speaking of the Stamps, this is the second straight year that they've lost the Grey Cup to a team that they, for lack of a better term, they were better than. The Stampeders are a better football team than both the Red Blacks last year and the Argos this year. But yet in the title game, they have lost. And I looked at this and I wrote a piece for 3Down about this, kind of comparing them to those 2000 Alouettes team. There's no doubt in my mind that the Stampeders are by far, if you look at the records in the regular season, they're like 30 wins better than the next closest team since 2010, which is phenomenal. They've been to the Grey Cup. What, this is what, their fourth trip to the Grey Cup this decade? They only have one win. And I'm looking at it, and you kind of look at this team, you kind of remember those Alouettes teams, those early, that 2000 to 2008 Alouettes, where they went to something like 6 Grey Cups but only won one, and then the narrative changed when they won in 09 and 10. But that choker label, that can't win the big one, that used to kind of, even though Calvillo had won a Grey Cup, kind of was on him because they kept going to the Grey Cup and they kept losing. Is that kind of what we're seeing with the Stamps here? Do you think, like, maybe they can reverse their fortunes like the Owls did? But I'm starting to feel the same vibe between that team then and this team now.
Well, yeah, I think there is a definite similar vibe. The Montreal Alouettes won a Grey Cup early on, I believe, against the Eskimos, you know, maybe 2002. I'm not sure, but
you nailed it, buddy.
2002? Okay,
yeah.
Good. And then they were in the Grey Cup almost every single year and lost a lot of them. So what, the Stamps are been in 4, lost 3. I mean, yeah, I can see the similarities definitely. And they were dominant teams in the regular season and just couldn't seem to get over that hump. Oh, of course, they could beat the Ticats in the Grey Cup, but they can't seem to beat anyone else. So I don't know if they're going to keep this. Like, if they make it again next year, and lose in the Grey Cup. We're in Buffalo Bill territory here, I believe.
Yeah, it's weird you bring up the Ticats, because in the piece I did bring up that the one win they did have was against the Ticats, but what if Taylor Reed's a half second early and that block's deemed legal, and Brandon Bank, they're a penalty and very first episode of this show, you can go back and listen to it. You and I discussed that Grey Cup. We both said we the flag was legit. But it was borderline. It was marginal. If that flag doesn't get thrown, they're 0-4 in the Grey Cup. And they're not. They're 1-3. But it's weird. Like, Mitchell is a good player. He was the MOP last year. He's a good football player. But when he gets in these big games, look at his numbers in the Grey Cup against Hamilton, the one they won. He was named Grey Cup MVP. Zach Caleros outplayed him in that game. And Caleros would have been MVP if the Ticats would have pulled that one out. I think maybe Brandon Banks if he would have returned that punt. But yeah. even in this one, like, Jerome Messam was named Most Valuable Canadian. And I know Andy Fantuz was named that in the Calgary-Hamilton Grey Cup, but it's always weird to me when players on losing team get those. Declan Cross, man, was the guy that I was looking at. He had the two-point converts. He had a big catch in that game. Good McMaster kid, a guy who flies under the radar, does all the gritty, dirty work. Would have been nice to see him get some recognition. I thought, because the Argos won, I thought he was going to get it when I heard Messam. And Messam had a great game, don't get me wrong. He had, what, two touchdowns, 60-some-odd yards rushing, a couple catches. But I was like, oh, man, it would have been really nice for Declan Cross to get some recognition for the game he played. Because he also had a really good season for the Ticats, too. Or for the Argos, I mean.
Yes. I like Declan Cross as a player. He's a fullback, but he makes plays every opportunity he gets. And, I would like to see him get the Most Outstanding Canadian Award as well, because he played a hell of a game on the winning team, too.
Yeah, and so. We're not just saying this because he follows the podcast account on Twitter. That's just happenstance. He does. He does indeed.
That's cool.
Don't get me – I was on this. You can check my tweets from Grey Cup Sunday. I was on the Declan Cross should be most valuable Canadian to Grey Cup before he gave us some love. What about Ricky Ray, though, man? Like, do you think this was Ray's last game? He said at that championship parade, they're chanting one more year, and he's like, well, how about one? What about two? And then apparently he said at the locker room cleanup that he's seriously considering retirement. Jim Popp thinks Ray will be back, but it's up in the air. What do you think? Do you think we've seen the last of Ricky Ray?
It is kind of weird, the mixed messages he's thrown out there. I'm not sure, man. I'm kind of on the fence about it, because you can go to a winner like Burris did last year, or if he comes back for 2 years, he could have a legit shot at one or two more Grey Cups. I mean, with Tressman as coach, Pop as GM, I'm sure they're going to put together a pretty damn good team next year, too. So do I think he's going to retire? I have no idea. Would I like to see him back and playing for a year or two? Sure. I mean, he's a joy to watch. Yes, his numbers weren't spectacular in this Grey Cup game. He was under 60% completion percentage, but he just got the job done. You know, when it came down to crunch time, he made that drive to get them into field goal range, and that's what won the game for them. So I'm not sure, but I'd like to see him back.
As a CFL fan, I want to see Ricky Ray return. As a Ticats fan, I would not be upset if he left, because since he's been in this division, he's won two Grey Cups, and the Ticats still have not won one. But, man, seeing just, I don't know, Ricky Ray, maybe one of the most underappreciated players. Like, not Kevin Glenn underappreciated, but, like, it was funny. When Mike Riley won MOP, and very deservedly won MOP, it's insane to think of Ricky Ray, that his career – say this was his last game. His career ends. He's a four-time Grey Cup champion, the most Grey Cups for a starting quarterback. Four. He has that he's the guy. But yet he never won MOP. And I look at him a lot like I look at Drew Brees in the NFL. Drew Brees, you're going to look at his career when it's all said and done. Both guys, Ray and Brees, Hall of Fame players. They've won championships. Brees only won one. Ray's won four. And you're going to go, like, how did these guys not win MVP, MOP? Like, how... Like, you're just going to look at the numbers and look at what they've done and look at the resume and see their bust in the Hall of Fame and go, how the hell did these guys not win? Like, Ricky Ray, maybe if he hangs on a couple years, he could get an MOP. But I don't think his Hall of Fame, like, he's a lock. It's just it's one of those things where I just look at it and go, it's almost unfathomable to think that Ricky Ray spent his entire career, the early parts he was – behind Calvillo as the top guy. Then Burris kind of snuck in there, and now we have Mitchell and Riley, and it's just kind of insane to think that he could possibly end his career without being named the league's best player. It's almost unfathomable.
Well, it's funny because if you look at his record in the regular season when he's the starting quarterback for the Toronto Argonauts, it's below 500. And I know we don't really like to look at wins for quarterbacks, you know, but it is kind of odd that he has a losing record being the starting quarterback for the Argonauts, but has two Grey Cup championships.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, and the two Grey Cups they won, they went 9-9 both years. Mm-hmm. And the one year, because it was they won in 12 and then in 13, they were like 11-7. It was like their best year there, and they got beat in the East Final by the Tigers. Like, it's just, I don't know. Like, you just look at Ray's career, and like obviously the stuff in Edmonton, like he was great in Edmonton. But even there, they had years. He was the quarterback there when their like 30-plus year consecutive playoff streak ended. And it's like, I don't think he's underrated because I think everyone realizes how great of a player he is. But he's never been sort of the guy, and it's just. You're going to look at, like I said, 10, 15, 20 years, people who never saw him play are going to see his stats and are going to go, how did this guy not get MOP? I don't know. It's just crazy to me. But I really hope we haven't seen the last of him. I hope he has another couple years in where he has a chance to win MOP. But let's say Ray does go. What do you think the backup options are for the Argos? Like, obviously, the talk's going to be of a certain number four who wears black and gold right now going back to Toronto. But we don't know what the Ticats are up to. What do you think? What do you think the options could be for the Argos if Ray decides that he is going to go out on top?
They could bring back old Stephen Giles, I think. That's what they're going to do.
The old one-eyed wombat.
Yes. But, that's really hard. I mean, there's, you know, James Franklin, maybe. I'm just thinking of quarterbacks that are going to be free. But the most logical choice, I'd have to think, is Zach Kolaros, just because of the situation in Hamilton. His past with Toronto, I'm sure he'd love, if he's not with Hamilton, I'm sure he'd love to go to Toronto and really stick it to us. So I could see that happening if Ray retires. You know, who wouldn't want to play under Mark Trestman, you know?
For sure.
And Tommy Condell is there. I'm not sure if he's going to be there next year, but we know that they're very close. So I'm sure he'd love to come in and reunite with Condell as well.
So any more Grey Cup you want to talk about? Anything else that kind of stood out from the game that you want to make sure we all get a chance to discuss?
No, I think we covered basically all of it.
Just
beautiful, 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 beautiful.
But we will, before we move on to talking about the Vanier Cup, the last thing we will say is the Podski Wee Wee Grey Cup curse continues. The Argos have now won the Grey Cup at every one either you or I have attended. So I think, can we come to an agreement here, pal? No more Grey Cup games for us. That's it. We're not going.
I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. Just keep our fingers crossed. It hasn't been at every Grey Cup I've been at,
Grey Cup you've been at where the Argos have played, they've won.
Precisely.
Okay, so
that's too bad.
Heart, but I can't do it either. I want to go to more Grey Cups. Okay. The Grey Cup wasn't the only Canadian football championship that was handed out last weekend. The Vanier Cup was played here in Hamilton, and I was able to go there. And, man, oh, man, I don't know where to start with this one either. This was just an ass-kicking. Western throttled Laval 39-17 in a score that kind of flatters the Rouge or. Western scored on their opening drive and led the rest of the way. The closest Laval ever got was 8, and Western just kind of beat them down, and it was kind of like a thorough beating, and I can never recall, and maybe you can, or maybe some listeners can, anyone ever taken Laval to the woodshed like this. Like, it was all Western all the time, just like a phenomenal performance top to bottom by the Mustangs. So you were at the three down get down watching the Vanier Cup. I can't imagine you were able to, you know, reveling, partying, so I don't expect there to be a lot, but I'm sure you caught some of the game. Just what did you think about Laval's dominating performance?
It was very surprising to me. I can't remember a time where Laval got a beatdown like that either. Not in a regular season game, not in a playoff game, not in the Vanier Cup. So from Western to come into that game and just really put the, you know, smack Laval around, it was very impressive. And I remember during the regular season in the CIS or U Sports football, Western was like 9-0 and there was a couple teams above them in the rankings that have lost a game, and I wondered, why is that? Like, do they have a tougher competition or something? But Western, I'm not sure if this has happened before, but Western went through the regular season and the playoffs undefeated. Pretty impressive feat for the Western Mustangs.
So I just want to rattle off some numbers here because they are astounding. Western put up 578 total yards of offense. They scored 5 touchdowns. They rushed for 302 yards. I cannot think of, and again, someone correct me if I'm wrong, has anyone ever rushed for over 300 yards against Laval? Chances are the answer was no. The quarterback for Western, Chris Merchant, I loved watching him play. I don't think he has a future, mostly because he's a Canadian quarterback in the CFL, but man, he was a lot of fun to watch. And the pair of running backs, the one that stood out to me, though, was Alex Taylor. Ran for 150 yards against Laval. He looks like a guy that can play at the next level. I'm very curious. Again, we say this kind of every time we talk about Canadian college ball. We're not experts here. I don't get it. It's never on TV. I don't get a chance to follow this. But in watching this one game, I saw the way that he kind of hit his holes. He picked his spots. He has speed. He has power. I think this Alex Taylor kid can play at the next level. I don't know what his prospects are, if he is a guy that teams are looking at, but I liked what I saw to him, and he would be a lot of fun to watch in the CFL field.
Yeah, and it's nice that we're in a day and age in the CFL where Canadian running backs are sort of the norm. I mean, it's not unusual to have a great Canadian running back in the CFL. You list them off, you know, Harris, Messam, you know, Cornish a couple years ago. So, you know, you never know. He could be the next great Canadian running back. Now, that's just a small sample size, but it's against Laval, one of the best teams in the whole U Sports. So, yeah, I'm not sure what year he's in college, but maybe next year or in a couple of years, we'll see him drafted in the CFL.
So the big thing, I think, coming from this game, aside from the fact that Western destroyed Laval, there was the big hit in the second quarter of the game. What did you think of it? It looked pretty bad live. Looked a little less bad on replay. I'm sure that was an oh crap moment at the bar you were at.
Yeah, Mike Hogan was there, and he let out a loud "Oh!" It was you know, everyone pretty much did, because watching it live, I mean, that was vicious. But and I felt bad for the kid. I mean, he looked like he was seriously hurt, had a concussion for sure. So it's too bad. But on the replay, it didn't look as bad. It looked like he led with his shoulder, so it wasn't a helmet to helmet hit. But man, like when you watch it live, I'm sure when you watch it live, like when you're at the game, it looked vicious.
It did. It actually almost led to a wee bit of an altercation in front of me. So I was sitting dead center midfield. Pretty much everyone on the right of me was in purple. Everyone on the left of me was in red. And when this happened, there was some Western fans that were sitting in front of me. And one guy kind of was like, when the flag was thrown, it was kind of like that dismissive hand wave of, get out of here with that. And the Laval fan took exception to that. Luckily, cooler heads prevailed and nothing happened. But it was definitely a tense situation for a few seconds there. But that can happen. And it was an unfortunate hit. And I hope everyone's okay. And I don't think there was any intent on the Western player there at all. But that was a rough one. And attendance was obviously going to be a big thing, a talking point. And there was about 2,000 more fans at this venue than there was last year. And I know, you know, 11,000 fans for the Canadian Football Championship is like, oh, the NCAA does this. And anyway, if you get a chance, this is my plea to anyone out there. I don't know where the Vanier Cup is going to be held next year, but if you get a chance to attend this game, if it's in your city, please do. I got to go to the last two, and I had a lot of fun. This game wasn't great, but I still had such a blast. It's live football. Some of these kids are going to play at the next level. Maybe Alex Taylor is a guy that we're going to see play in the CFL one day. There's probably half a dozen Laval offensive linemen that were in that game that are going to play at the next level. So go out there, support this, watch this. It's good football. I know people rag on the CFL, even CFL fans, about the quality of the game, and I can only imagine what people think of Canadian university football. But to be honest with you, I attended 2 Vanier Cups. It's the most Canadian college football I've watched in a long time, and man, oh man, I had a blast. I wish I could watch more Canadian ball. I wish it was available on television. If it was, I probably would. This is a good product, and it gets better and better every year. So please, if the Vanier is in your area in the next few years, please do your best. Go out and watch it. Support this. Watch them. You're going to have fun. Trust me. I had a blast, and I think you will too. So that's kind of my getting on my soapbox there at the end.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've been to a couple of Vanier Cups as well and always had a great time. And maybe next year I will attend some Alberta Golden Bears game because I believe they're on the upswing. I think they had a pretty good year this year, and maybe I'll go and catch some games next year because you can't watch it on TV. So get out and it's a great product. You're right. Every time, like, Vanier Cup is always, not always, but usually a very good game, a very entertaining game. And I wish it got more coverage.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I think the running back for the Alberta team won the Heck Creighton this year, which kind of took me by surprise. But again, I don't get a chance to follow it, so I'm not as up on it as I should be. Okay, Grey Cup's out of the way, Vanier Cup's out of the way. Let's talk some news. We're going to start with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I mean, we're over half an hour into this and really haven't talked about Ticats at all. So I think this Ticats podcast should get a little black and gold dust sprinkled on it. And we're going to start talking about June Jones, Mike. A report by who else? Dave Naylor, who seems to be breaking all the relevant CFL news. He sent out a tweet early last week saying that the Ticats pretty much have a deal in place to take the interim tag off June Jones's name and make him the permanent head coach. I think this is a no-brainer. Bringing Jones back, I don't really think we have to really go into that. It seems he wants to be back. I don't know if you saw, but the American website UpRocks, which is the place I go to get like read like wrestling and pop culture articles, they had an article on June Jones on there last week. It was so random and weird. I saw his picture. I was like, what the hell is a picture of June Jones doing here? But they were talking about, and he did an interview with him talking about how he gets put in these situations with Hawaii and with SMU and now with the Ticats where teams hit rock bottom and they bring him in and he builds them back up. And they talked about how he built Hawaii into a team that went to a Sugar Bowl, how he built SMU into a team that actually competed for conference championships and did pretty well. So kind of giving him some props there and getting the CFL some American coverage, which was it was out of nowhere. So it was very strange to me. But what do you think? Jones coming back. You obviously like this move, right?
I love it. I love it. I'm a big June Jones guy. Ever since he came in, and yeah, speak of like when he was in Hawaii, I mean, Hawaii was, you'd never hear anything about that football team until he took over, to my knowledge anyways. I never remember Hawaii being a contender in the NCAA. So listen, this guy came in, he turned this team around very quickly, mind you, changed it up, made some decisions, put Banks in receiver, Mazzoli quarterback. And we were 6-4 in the last 10 games. So from being 0-8 to 6-4, it's just a no-brainer. You have to bring this guy back. And I think once he is officially signed, the dominoes will fall. Players will start re-signing with the Ticats because from all I hear, they love playing for this guy. So if we get this guy signed, which I believe we will, we'll get some of these players back.
I'm going to be, quote-unquote, that fan right now, Mike. I believe if they get Jones hired and they make a few right moves, I legitimately believe this team can go from the 6 wins last year to 10-plus next year and challenge for a Grey Cup championship. I really, really do.
Well, the Argos did it this year. Right?
Exactly. You make the right moves and anything can happen. You mentioned the 6-4 record. That run over the last 10 games, only the Stamps and Red Blacks had better records over the final 10 games than the Argos did. And the Ticats did, and the Bombers, the Argos, and the Riders all had 6-4 records. Stamps, Red Blacks, Bombers, Argos, Riders, what do all those teams have in common? They made the playoffs. So clearly the ability is there for this team to rebound in 2018. I am a little leery, though, that Naylor sent out this tweet over a week ago now, because I believe it was really early in Grey Cup week. I think it was like the Tuesday or something. He sent it out. We kind of haven't heard anything, and it kind of makes me wonder what the holdup here could be. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, it's a no-brainer to bring him back, but I don't know. It still seems weird to me that nothing official has sort of been announced. And I'm trying to lean on the positive side here and think, okay, maybe they're just waiting. Maybe Jones is on vacation or maybe he's not in town and they want to do a big press conference or something to officially announce the signing. But I'm going to lean in that direction. I'm going to say this is going to get done and we're going to have June Jones back as a head coach. And instead of leaning on the negative and go, well, there's got to be a problem here because that's where I think everyone is expecting to go with this. But I don't know. I just want it to be official so we can stop worrying about it.
Yeah, me too. And, they're not going to announce anything during Grey Cup week.
No, we can take those
days off. And, so we'll take it from Monday to Thursday right now, which it's still, 4 or 5 days without any news about it whatsoever. So it is a little bit concerning, but I'm going to get on that positivity train as well and say that this is going to happen. June Jones is going to be back and we're going to be a contender next year.
All right, the other big Ticats news of the week. The CFL officially released the list of pending free agents. The Ticats have 17 players on that list, the fewest amount of any team in the CFL, which caught me by surprise. So,
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, the free agents year to year now, it's just like, I was looking at the Eskimos, and it's just
geez,
like,
they have like 40
holy
guys.
Crap. Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's just the world we live in right now in the CFL.
One-year deals have sort of necessitated this. And anyway, the Ticats list, I'll list the guys off here. Michael Atkinson, Brandon Banks, Mitch Barnett, Justin Capicotti, Jasper Collins, Larry Dean, Dominic Ellis, Evan Gill, Everett Golson, Jonathan Langa, Ted Laurent, Jeremiah Mazzoli, CO Prime, Nick Shortle, Luke Tasker, DeMond Washington, and Tony Washington. Now, normally this thing comes out, you and I would sit here and go, who do we want back? But we kind of did that. If you listen a few episodes ago, Drew Edwards, my boss at Three Down, he sort of released a preliminary list of some Ticats that would be free agents. And when that was, when that came out, we were asked some questions, and you and I did kind of a list of, I believe it was five guys that we wanted to sign back. So we're not going to do that again because I don't want to bore people by kind of us doing the same thing. So what I did is we're going to hand this over to the listeners and let the listeners have a say. I put out the call on Twitter and asked people to give us who they want back. And these are the replies I got, Mike. So see if you noticed a few names that come up time and time again. So Tina sent in, she wants Brandon Banks, but in parentheses, not sure it'll happen. Larry Dean, Jeremiah Mazzoli, Ted Laurent, Jonathan Langa, Jasper Collins, Luke Tasker, Dominic Ellis, Mitch Barnett, Justin Capicotti, Nick Shortle. Basically, she wants everyone back.
Everybody.
Which,
yeah.
If you know Tina, should not surprise you. She is a great fan. She loves the Ticats, and she always loves the players. So that, to me, not a big shock there. One of our many Adam listeners first sent in Speedy B and then came back and said Speedy B number one, Jeremiah Mazzoli number two, and then everyone else. Brian said Larry Dean, Ted Laurent, Jeremiah Mazzoli. He says he wants the O-line and the D-line to be kept together for cohesion purposes. Jason said Atkinson, Banks, Capicotti, Dean, Mazzoli, Tasker, Laurent, and Tony Washington. Matthew said Tasker, Banks, Dean, and Mazzoli. And Max finally said Michael Atkinson. So you can see Banks is a very popular guy. Mazzoli is a popular guy. Capicotti's a popular guy. Larry Dean's a popular Tasker. Like, you kind of see the same names pop up over and over again. So thank you, everyone, for giving us some talking points. Mike, if you had to pick one guy, let's do this. One player that you want to see come back, who is it?
Ooh,
one guy. Can only pick one.
Damn, dude. That's tough. That is really tough. I'm going to go with the people, with the Podski listeners. I'm going to go with Brandon Banks.
Okay. I'm going to go again. Did not see this name very often, saw it a couple times. I'm going to say Tony Washington. I think
that was my second pick, man. That was my second pick.
I want that offensive line to be that cohesive unit. I agree. If we can get that settled, man. And again, I don't think this will be the only guy we sign, but if you came to me and said you can only bring one guy back, we still have Zach Caleros. We still have a ton of receivers. Give me Tony Washington. We have our left tackle. I'd like the way that this thing's going. But with the Ticats free agent list out there, everyone else's list was obviously out there too. So I figured you and I could have a little fun here and take a look at the rest of the league and kind of make a three-player wish list of guys that we want to see in black and gold next year. So Mike, I will hand this over to you. What were the three players that you picked?
All right, I got Jamal Westerman, dud defensive lineman, Canadian guy from the Bombers. You know, he's a top player and he's Canadian. So then I got Manny Arsenault, a hell of a receiver, a big body dude, can make plays, would love to see him in that receiving corps with the Ticats. And Tommy Campbell, defensive back from Calgary. I heard somewhere, now correct me if I'm wrong, but apparently Tommy Campbell did not give up a touchdown pass this whole season until the Grey Cup game with that 100-yard pass to Devere Posey. So this guy is a serious shutdown defensive back. And I'd love to see him in black and gold.
Yeah, so I went off the board with some of these picks here. And honestly, it's because I don't think the Ticats need to do a ton to improve this team. And it was weird. And you and I discussed this, and I want to discuss it here too. Like, considering where this team was last offseason, where are the glaring weaknesses on this team right now that need to be addressed? Last year, it was the offensive line. It was the secondary. It was the kicking game. There are no huge holes in that secondary now. That secondary looked pretty darn good going into the season. If Tony Washington's back, that O-line is solidified. Yes, the QB situation obviously is the big one that needs to be settled between Jeremiah Mazzoli and Zach Caleros. But if Mazzoli walks, they still have Zach Collins under contract. So even if everything goes tits up with Jeremiah, they still have a quarterback. So as weird as it sounds, this team doesn't have a ton of holes to fill. So like that's kind of where my mindset was. And it was really weird looking down a list of all the players. And I know you feel the same way, going like, who do I pick here? So keep that in mind when I name my guys. First, I took Darryl Waud, a Hamilton boy. Sadly, has dealt with injuries the last few years that has kind of limited him. He's only played 8 games the last 2 seasons, but he was a second-round pick. And Hamilton's D-line could use some Canadian depth. Ted Laurent's a free agent. Justin Capicotti's a free agent. They have Justin Vaughn. They have Connor McGough. Those guys, maybe they step up in year 2. Vaughn, I thought, played fantastically in year 1. Maybe those guys get a little more playing time. But it's never a bad thing to kind of have depth at Canadian defensive line. I think Waud, Hamilton guy, went to Western, but he's from the city. Feel like he could be a guy that could be persuaded to come home. I too picked Manny Arsenault. This he was the big one for me. Like basically working on the assumption that Banks or Tasker or maybe both could be elsewhere. You get a strong, big-bodied receiver like Arsenault. I think that'd be a smart move. I will also say I just kind of like Arsenault and would like to see him as a Ticat. So maybe that's just me, thinking of fantasy football or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I just like Manny Arsenault as a player. And the Ticats, Terrence Tolliver is a pretty big guy, and Andy Fantuz, if he returns, a pretty big guy. But Arsenault has that sort of speed, size.
Yeah, he's just like a ball, right?
He's a beast.
He just run. Yes, yes, yeah.
And last, I kind of cheated here. I took 2 guys in 1 spot. I picked Mitchell White and Jermaine Gabriel. So it is a bit of a cheat. But with Mitchell White, I'd like to see him here, both DBs. But I think he's going to test the NFL. So I think obviously his talents are pretty obvious. Probably, like I said, going to take another shot at the NFL. But I think he'd be a great addition to Hamilton's secondary. And Jermaine Gabriel, I think, is another great defensive player. Canadian as well, just like Waud. Then you could start 2 Canadians in the secondary. They could move, I think, Courtney Steven back to what I think is his better utilized spot at the wide side corner position. And then you kind of have some ratio flexibility. And I think Gabriel, you can start at safety. And I don't know. So those were the guys. I guess I'll say Gabriel over White just because of the passport and I think White's ability to go south. So, yeah, I got Waud, Gabriel, and Arsenault. And only one of the same. That's very rare. Usually when we do this, we always pick the same guys.
I know. Well, like we were talking about earlier, there is a ton of free agents to choose from. So, you know, maybe it wasn't too odd that we didn't get each player the same.
True.
And a good thing for the show.
Yes. And like we also have to mention, a lot of these guys that are on these lists, there's like 200 something guys, a lot of them are going to re-sign with their teams. Free agency doesn't start until, I believe, February 13th. So there's still plenty of time. Over 2 months left before these guys are free to peddle their wares for other teams. So I'm sure that list gets whittled down. The list got put out, and then literally seconds later, it was announced that Brad Sinopoli had re-signed with the Red Blacks. So it doesn't take long for these guys for these lists to be completely meaningless. But there's a lot of good players on there, and it'll be interesting to see where everyone lands. And I'm sure that'll keep us plenty interested this offseason, talking about player moves and what's going to go on. So it'll give us plenty of fodder for the podcast until the season gets started next June. Let's talk some CFL news now, Mike. And we're going back to the expansion well again, because it just seems like every single time I click on a CFL article talking about expansion, it's a new piece of information to get excited about. This latest one came from Devin Haru from CBC, and I'm just going to list off the things that he got in this article for the Halifax expansion group. They're looking at 5 pieces of land to build a stadium in Halifax. They're already doing economic impact studies on the sites. They hired an LA artist to do a rendering of a stadium that they presented to council. They think the Schooners name right now is the front runner. And they believe that in Halifax, those sponsorship levels that they can get there are comparable to Winnipeg, Regina, and Hamilton, 3 of the better CFL markets. Like, I know years ago, like we're about to finish our 3rd year doing this show, and we've been talking about expansion fairly recently a lot more than we normally do, because you, as always, and I say that, and I don't say this in any way to denigrate you, but you're always, it's never going to happen. But man, oh man, every single thing we've seen over the past 3 weeks, it's like, this is really going to happen.
Yeah, it's so exciting, man. Like, just, it was the buzz all weekend long at the Grey Cup. To hear the news reports coming out, like, from CTV, Halifax, not from the usual, TSN or whatever, people are digging around in that area to get the what's happening and to hear that they're looking for land. You know, I heard some places that they're looking at, and I'm not too familiar with Halifax. I've only been there a couple times, but just that they're moving forward with this, you know, they're being aggressive makes me really, really excited for this. And the hell with it. I'm getting my hopes up. I think that this is going to happen. They got to figure out what they're going to do with the stadium, how they're going to pay for it, whatever. But I believe that this ownership group is the real deal, and they're going to push and push until it is done.
I got to be honest. I might cry the second they announce – the second we see an Atlantic Schooners or whatever they decide to call themselves, I might shed a tear thinking, like, this actually – occurred. And if that's the case, get the bronze chiseler out, or however you make those busts for the Hall of Fame, because you're making one for Randy Ambrosi and you're getting him in there, because this would getting a 10th team in the CFL has been a dream forever. And if this man gets it done in less than a year on the, because they want the conditional franchise before the start of this upcoming season, and I know that they've had a conditional franchise before, and I know Ottawa had one, but it's like if this man gets this done, if he gets a conditional franchise granted to the city of Halifax and the Maritime Regions for a 10th CFL team in less than a year on the job, this man goes to the Hall of Fame. Like, no doubt in my mind.
It's amazing how great of a job he's done in such a short period of time. I mean, everyone loves him. I mean, all the fans love him. The players love him. It's just a really exciting time. I don't know. I'm pretty sure he interviewed for the job when Mr. Orridge got it. So, you know, they made a big mistake not hiring him back then. But, yeah, I'm with you, though. If there's a Halifax team, you know, the first game, I guarantee I will shed a tear, because it's been such a dream of mine to have a 10th team in Halifax or Moncton or wherever in the CFL. It just make the league coast to coast. You know, and if they get that conditional franchise awarded, let the hype start building in Halifax. You know, people are going to start getting excited about this if they're not already. So I couldn't be happier about the situation, that there is actual things happening when it comes to a team in Halifax.
So speaking of Randy Ambrosi, he gave his State of the League address during Grey Cup week, and it covered a lot of ground, talked about concussions and all that stuff. We're not going to get into that. Oh. There was something, though, in that we are going to touch on that I think maybe wasn't talked about as much as it could have been, mostly because of the concussion stuff. It's moving the season up earlier. And I think you and I both, when we heard that they were doing that third bye week and they're doing 21 weeks, kind of figured that the season would be going up maybe a week or so earlier. But it was the commissioner mentioning a mid-October Grey Cup. And I got to be honest, Mike, that had me wincing a little bit. Here's exactly what he said. Imagine playing our Grey Cup, let's just say the third week of October, when it's beautiful everywhere and you don't have to wear 900 layers of clothing and you don't have to go get your winter boots out. And I don't know, especially after what we just saw in Ottawa. I know his quote came out before the game, but the game we just saw in Ottawa with the snow and how much fun that was, I think losing that out, I think the league would lose a little something, don't you?
I think it would. I think that part of the reason why this game was watched by so many people on television, where they turned on the TV and said, whoa, look at this. This is going to be interesting, right? So I think you do miss something out if it's in mid-October. I'm kind of on the fence when it comes to moving the season back, you know, keeping it the same. I could see benefits to both things, but maybe mid-October is a little too early. Maybe just a couple weeks would be nice, you know, around the start of November, you know, the middle of November.
No, I can totally see that, and I maybe a couple weeks. And like, I think there's some logistical problems with moving the season up as well. I think you don't want the start of the season conflicting too much with the end of the NHL and NBA seasons. The NHL especially, because you don't want the first week of the CFL season to coincide with like the start of the Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Finals. Because I think.
And what about the World Series playoffs too?
Yeah,
right?
You're gonna have the end.
If the Blue Jays are in it, you know, if the Blue Jays are in it, that could be a bad thing for ratings.
For sure. And the draft, I think, gets affected. I don't think you can have the CFL draft before the NFL draft because of especially recently, we've seen a lot more Canadian players, both Canadian players playing down south and Canadian. Look at Anthony O'Clair. He's playing for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Played. I watched him play in the Vanier Cup last year. He's now playing in the National Football League. Teams are scouting players from everywhere now. It's not just we're only going to focus on the big colleges. They're scouting littler colleges. They're scouting internationally. There are players from Germany getting drafted in the NFL. They're scouting players in Canada. So I think you have the – if you have the CFL draft for the NFL draft, I think it throws a monkey wrench in the plans. And this is something I don't think a lot of people are talking about, Labor Day. Labor Day is one of the biggest days on the CFL calendar. And I think – pardon me. If you were to move the season up the six or so weeks that Ambrosi is talking about, Labor Day goes from being mid-season to being at the end of the season. And, yes, it would get rid of that whole the season doesn't start until Labor Day talking point that you and I hate as much as anyone else. But I think Labor Day would mean a lot less if it took place that much later in the season. Like, just look at this year, for example. The Grey Cup, it, based on Ambrosi's timeline, would have been played mid-October. So it would have been October 15th. I looked at the calendar. So the playoffs would have started October 1st. Labor Day would have been week 17. The Ticats were out of the playoffs by week 17. I think that's too late to hold the Labor Day Classics if you really want to keep those as marquee events. Now, if they move it up, they move it up. I'm not going to stop watching it simply because we're playing games in May. I just think that there's a lot of things, there's a lot of dominoes that can fall that will, that make this a lot harder and kind of take away some of the specialness that we have in the CFL. And I think Labor Day is a big one. If that's mid-season, everyone kind of, it's like, oh, the summer's coming to an end, Labor Day, we're kicking off the second half of the season. Gets people's juices flowing for the stretch run. If at the end of the season, I think people are like, I think it'll still be exciting, but I don't think it'll mean as much.
No, it's just, you know, halfway through the season is Labor Day. You know, it might not be exactly, it might be the 10th game or whatever, but that represents the halfway mark of the season to me anyways. And it would be very, I never even thought about it, to be honest, until you just talked about it there a minute ago. It would be very, very strange to have a Labor Day game in week 16 or week 17. It wouldn't seem right. So yeah, that's there's a lot of stuff to think about when you're talking about moving up the CFL season. But one of the reasons that this might be happening is because of a possible deal with the NFL Network in the States. Now, that's a very interesting thing that's been thrown out there. Now, I don't like the idea of changing the season for an American broadcast, but unless they're throwing around some serious cake for the rights, but I don't know if that's going to happen or not.
Well, that's it too. I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, it's great that the NFL Network's going to want to broadcast games in the U.S. Are they giving the CFL more money than TSN is? Because if not, TSN doesn't want games going up against the NHL playoffs, the Stanley Cup Finals. They don't want games like they absolutely do not want that. So they want programming for those summer months where there's nothing going on, and they don't worry about competing with the NFL because football's football. I think we've seen time and time again, as much as we might say, hey, the CFL shouldn't play games on Sunday, the CFL games constantly do better ratings on Sunday than the NFL games. So that, as much as I would prefer not to have to click back and forth between the CFL game and the NFL game, I'd like to be able to watch all the CFL games and watch all the NFL games. That, hey, people watch Sunday football, and when the CFL is played on Sunday against the NFL, it does better. So to hell with that. Mm. But the NFL Network's not going to give the CFL more money than TSN is. TSN should have the right to kind of dictate when – and not dictate maybe, but like have a bigger say in when the season's going to start, because they're the primary partner of this. And at the end of the day, as much as I know – there's a bunch of the Americans are flocking to the CFL. A lot of people are starting to tune in there more and more every year. And you and I know a couple of American fans, and I love the American fans. But the CFL is the Canadian Football League. And Canada, to me, in this instance, has to come first. And that means TSN has to come first. So unless the NFL Network is willing to give more money for the rights than TSN does, I think you kind of tell them, you know, if you can't deal with this, then I guess you guys, you don't get it. We'll stick with ESPN, because from what I'm hearing from Americans, they prefer the ESPN platform because they can always at least find the games. With the NFL Network, you have one channel. And right, what if you think is the NFL Network going to be playing those September and October games on a Friday and Saturday night over talking about what's going on in the NFL? I don't think they are. At least with ESPN, you can have it on ESPN3, the online thing. You can have it on one of their many channels. Like you can. There's always some – ESPN has a need for content where I don't think the NFL Network does once the NFL season kicks off. Right. I don't know. This seems like a little bit putting the cart before the horse. I feel like – I when the Ambrosi says something, I understand. Like, he doesn't say these things just on happenstance. He makes mention of this for a reason. We saw that with the whole expansion thing. We saw, what was it, 5 or 6 weeks ago when he mentioned expansion, and you and I sat here and we're like, what the hell is he talking about? Where'd this come from?
Right.
And now look where we are. Where there's smoke, there's fire. This guy doesn't shoot his mouth off for no reason. Maybe we have to get used to the idea of a mid-October Grey Cup. I just hope that they really, really put thought into this and make sure that everything falls into place, because there's a lot of negatives here with a TV deal with NFL Network and with some of the losses that we would suffer with some of the things in Canada and the CFL, with like Labor Day. I really hope they put a lot of thought into this before they make a change.
Yeah, so do I. And I'm willing to bet that ESPN has a much larger reach than the NFL Network would. Now, I'm not positive about that, but, you know, ESPN has been the biggest sports network in the States for a long, long time. And I know that they're on the downswing when it comes to subscribers, but, you know, that's just the way it is these days with the cord cutting and all that stuff. But unless they're going to throw a boatload of cash at the CFL, I would like them to stick with ESPN.
Here's another thing that just you mentioned cord cutters, and it popped into my head. DAZN. Do you have DAZN? The online, basically people bought it this year to watch all the NFL games through streaming.
Oh, the DAZN.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I don't. I do not have it.
Okay,
no.
So I do have it, and one of the things that comes with that is a stream of NFL Network. Now we know the CFL does not have streaming rights. Would the streaming for NFL Network, that when they're playing a CFL game, would that, because there's another wrinkle, because the CFL does not want to have its game streamed without being, like, you can watch them on TSN's website, but you have to have a cable subscription. You don't have right. to have a cable subscription to have DAZN. So NFL Network, I watch NFL Network on, I have it, and I watch NFL Network on there all the time. Does that mean that we would be getting CFL games on that NFL Network feed? Because there's something that maybe the league needs to consider as well.
Yeah, you got to look at all the options, and that's the future, right? Streaming is the future, and it would be nice for them to get ahead on that. It would be nice to have a streaming network for the people outside of Canada that could watch, because obviously the people aren't subscribing to TSN, right? So maybe with that online aspect of it, that streaming aspect of it, you could bring a lot more eyeballs to the league.
Maybe. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But like I said, where there's smoke, there's fire. So I'm expecting something to come out and a show we'll talk about during the offseason. But let's go back to some football stuff. The Owls are possibly making some changes to the structure of their organization. I saw it on 3Down. I'm sure it was elsewhere as well. But I get most of my CFL news from 3Down, not just because I work for them, but because it's easy to find it there. Anyway, Kavis mm-hmm. Reed apparently would become the VP of football operations. John Murphy, who was the former assistant general manager and director of player personnel with the Calgary Stampeders, and is currently the Riders, I think he's the assistant vice president of football operations, he would become Montreal's general manager, and Devon Claybrooks would become the team's head coach. Murphy's long wanted to be a GM. I think that would be a good move. Claybrooks, that defense in Calgary is really good. I think he's a head coach in waiting. At some point, he's going to get a shot. But when I read this, all I could think of is, how in the hell does Kavis Reed keep failing upwards? He was a middling to okay defensive and special teams coordinator. He was a failure twice as a head coach in Edmonton, and then this last year in Montreal. He seemed in way over his head as general manager. They cut Bear Woods. They traded S.J. Green. Just
They brought in Darian Durant, who played like garbage. Ernest Jackson played like garbage this year.
Yeah, like, it just seemed like he didn't know what he was doing as a GM, and now somehow he's going to get a promotion after the Owls finished a CFL worst 3-15 and lost their last 11 games. I wish I could be as bad as that in my job as he is and keep getting promoted. How does this keep happening?
He must have some pictures of the Wetton Halls or something, because it just doesn't make sense, right? I mean, he comes in, he's the GM.
And let's not forget, he went from special teams coordinator to general manager. How does this happen?
Must have had a hell of an interview, because that just does not happen in professional football. So, you know, he's made a lot of bad decisions over the years.
Yes, and he has. Consequences.
And it's consequence. And just the wacky stuff he's been saying in the media, it's really kind of weird. I can't see this guy, you know, being the boss of people that they're bringing in that are, you know, respectable. Not that he's not respected in the league, but you know, you have a higher standard for some of these names that are coming in. You know, Murphy's been a long time GM in the waiting. Clay Brooks, great defensive coordinator for a couple years with the Stampeders. I mean, no defense has been better. They've been pretty much at the top of the heap the whole time he's been there. So some really well-respected names with some great coaching background to them. And this guy's sitting at the top talking about consequences and all this wacky stuff. It's really quite strange, to be honest.
I just don't get it. I really don't. I don't wish ill will on anyone, and I don't like seeing people get fired because every one of these guys has a family to feed. But I just cannot understand how he just keeps getting promoted after promote. Like, it literally boggles my mind, because he must be the most affable person you will ever meet, because he just keeps sucking at everything he does and keeps going higher in the ranks. Like, I'm halfway expecting him to go from this, and next thing you know, we're going to hear a press conference about how the Wettenhalls just handed him the team and he's now the owner. Like,
right.
It just makes right. no sense how this keeps happening.
No, it doesn't. He should be a special teams coordinator or something like that. Not president of
football. Like, that's John right. Hupnagel's job.
That's Ken Austin's job. You know?
That's Wally Buono's job. That's like,
yeah. I don't know, man.
I don't get it.
Questionable decision on the Alouettes' part, for sure.
Okay, the last bit of news we'll talk about before we let everyone go. This was broken by, I think we can safely say, our boy Justin Dunk. You've met him. He's been on the podcast. I work with him. So I think it's fair to call him our boy. Broke the news
yes.
that the Lions hired Ed Hervey as general manager. And this was kind of – there was a tweet sent out that the Lions were going to make a major announcement. And it was like, oh, people were saying, is Wally stepping down? Is this just Wally saying he's staying on for another year? And Wally is staying on. He's going to stay on for one final year as head coach. He's going to remain the VP of football operations, the same job title that Cavis Reed might end up having one day. And Wally Buono and Cavis Reed having the same job. Crazy. Right. Anyway, Hervey's going to be the GM. And we discussed his exit from Edmonton and the weirdness surrounding that. I think this is a great move by the Lions. Ed Hervey took a team in Edmonton that finished, 4-14 and got them to a Grey Cup championship like 3 years later. The home run. This sets up the Lions, I think, to not only – like, the talent is there in BC. We know Hervey can find talent. Look at all the guys that he brought into the league, Darrell Walker, Brandon Zylstra, guys like that. James Franklin, who everyone thinks is a star in the making. Like, he knows how to find talent, does Ed Hervey. So getting him there in BC with the talent they already have on board, his knack for finding talent, Buono getting up in age and having one final season to kind of usher in this new era, I think this is a great move by the Lions. I think this could make them a very, very dangerous team in a couple of years.
Absolutely. He did a tremendous job in Edmonton, and you still see, I mean, from this year, I mean, that's still basically the team that he built. And it was a really good team. I think they went 12-6. There's a ton of talent. So this guy is a good GM. I'm not sure exactly what happened here. Something with the media and his closed off locker rooms to the media and all this stuff. And that could have. He said that it was more Jason Moss. I don't know how truthful that is, but it could have been a combo of both of them. But listen, all that aside, the guy knows talent. The guy is a really good GM, and he's going to do a great job for a BC Lions team that is already stacked and really underperformed this year. They could have been – I mean, we picked them at the start of the year to make it to the Grey Cup. I believe I picked them to win the Grey Cup. That didn't happen, but there is a lot to work with, and he can add pieces. I believe the most important thing is offensive line for the BC Lions. He's going to add some big boys up front to protect – whoever the quarterback may be, if it's Jennings, I don't know what Lule's status is. Whoever it is, I believe that's one of his first tasks, is to make sure that this offensive line can protect whoever is quarterback.
I totally agree with you. And let's not forget, as disappointing as BC finished, they finished 7-11. They were 5-2 at one point last year, and Travis Lule looked like he had found the fountain of youth, and they were rolling, and then he got hurt, and that kind of derailed them. I kind of wonder if Lule would have stayed healthy, if they would have been able to make a run. But that's neither here nor there. I see the hiring of Ed Hervey, and I think, man, that West Division just – it got even more loaded. I don't know how this keeps happening, that the West just gets this talent there, whether it's in the front office or on the field or on the sidelines. And it's just like – we're going to do in 6 months, you and I are going to sit down. We're going to try to predict where all these things are going to land. And I'm already thinking about it. And I'm looking at the West Division going, man, one of these teams minimum is going to miss the playoffs. And I'd be hard pressed to tell you which team it's going to be, because Winnipeg still looks pretty good. Calgary's Calgary. Edmonton looks like they're going to, like they're a juggernaut. BC, look at, like, I don't know what this West Division is going to look like, and I don't know where the dominoes are going to fall. I just look at this and just go, wow, what a coup by the Lions to get this guy in there. They're going to be tough to beat next year.
I believe so. And yeah, it's a head scratcher how all the talent seems to go to the West, but you know, with domination in the regular season, and then somehow an Eastern team wins the Grey Cup almost, you know, not every year, but the last couple of years at least.
Oh, as long as the Ticats don't get to the Grey Cup, then the East tends to win. And I know that's to hear for Ticat fans, but yeah, that's the way it's kind of been recently.
Away she goes.
Yeah, it's the way she goes. So that's the show for this week. And that's the show for this year. This is our last episode of 2017. So you can catch us all back here in 2018. Any of the news that comes out the last month of this the calendar year 2017, because we're recording this on December 1st. There's a month left in 2017. Whatever we will talk about coming in the beginning of January. But for myself and Mike, I would just like to thank everyone who had stopped by to listen to us, give our thoughts and opinions throughout the year. I think I can speak for you, Mike. I say we really do appreciate everyone who listens, comments, who asks questions. You take the time out of your day to pay us mind, and we appreciate each and every one of you. So thank you. I hope you're back next year. Tell a friend. I hope we can grow the audience. And just thank you very much for listening to the show.
Yes, yes. You know, I'd just like to add that to everyone that I met at Grey Cup who listens to the show, a big thank you to all you guys and girls. It was really cool meeting some people that listen to us talk football each week about the Ticats, and to give them a pin. And it's just awesome to know that people listen and enjoy the show. So thank you very much.
Yeah, we're just a couple of schmucks that decided to do it, and it's grown into something a lot larger than I think either of us ever thought it would. So yes, from Mike, from myself, thank you very much. And we will see you next year. So don't forget, though, that you can still subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts as well as Google Play and Stitcher, or you can listen to the show or download it over at 3downnation.com. And don't be shy. Hit us up on social media. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PodskiWeWeWe. We've been doing some stuff on there. A lot of the comments we got about players coming back to the Ticats came through the PodskiWeWe Twitter account. Check out our Instagram. There's some pictures up that Mike took of himself at Grey Cup. I took some pictures from the Vanier Cup, so we got some stuff up there. We're going to continue to be posting stuff on both the PodskiWeWe accounts on Twitter and Instagram as the offseason rolls on. And, of course, you can also follow us on our personal accounts, where you can hit us up with those questions and comments like you always have been. Mike, let them know where they can find you on Twitter, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am JoshSmith_82. And, of course, don't forget, feel free to throw those comments and questions our way in the 3downNation comment section. That was PodskiWeWe. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CFPod Network on Twitter.